Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Across the UK, online and on DAB, the Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
A mid-morning dance with the devil from the Farmer of Fury.
Dangerous mid-morning debate with the Great Dictator.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to the Independent Republic of Mike Graham right here on Talk Radio. It's back to the grindstone for all those hard-working MPs today. They're all heading into Westminster to kickstart the Brexit debate because, of course, they haven't been able to talk about Brexit since last Thursday, when they also didn't talk about Brexit either because they were too busy asking people why they kept saying bad words that were hurting everybody's feelings. They'd all be arriving, of course, just in time for everybody else to be going home. 2:30 in the afternoon is when they're going to start working in the House of Commons. Talk about gentlemen's hours. I mean, I may be inappropriately genderising them there, but I mean, I really do think they should have started work a little bit early. They went to all the trouble last Thursday of actually not managing to adjourn Parliament in order to let the Tory party conference go ahead. Tory party conference is going ahead nonetheless. Meanwhile, there's a meeting being held, a cabal, if you like, by the leader of the Labour Party, the leader of the Lib Dems, the leader of the Greens, the leader of the SNP in Westminster, and I think even the leader of Plaid Cymru. And they're all going to sit around in the dark corridors of power, talking about who should take over in Downing Street, who should be made temporary Prime Minister. Well, I'll tell you what, never mind who's temporary Prime Minister, Boris Johnson is the permanent Prime Minister for the moment, unless you want to have an election. Don't start talking to me about governments of national unity. That, I'm afraid, is for the birds. That is nothing to do with how we run this country. Meanwhile, up in Manchester, the Conservatives are busy having their annual conference as if nothing is actually wrong. That's right, the one all the other parties refused to adjourn for last Thursday is going ahead. They are pressing ahead with their plans to leave the European Union on October the 31st. And Boris Johnson is said to be in high spirits. And this, of course, is despite all of the clouds gathering around two separate allegations, one of them over 20 years old, where a journalist, who happens to be the girlfriend of Robert Peston, apparently, has said basically that he groped her at a spectator party 20 years ago. Well, forgive me, but I think she might have spoken up about it before now, wouldn't you say? The Prime Minister is unveiling a raft of new policies, refusing to stop saying surrender, and he's continuing with the mantra of get Brexit done. Yesterday, Jacob Rees-Mogg described Britain as Gulliver, tied down at Lilliput by a ragtag motley collection of feeble, fickle, footling politicians desperate to cancel the largest single democratic mandate in our history. I couldn't agree more. We'll be live in Manchester this morning talking to Ben Bradley, up first, Conservative MP for Mansfield. But we want to hear from you, of course, 0344 499 1000. This is the place where the voice of the people is heard. Coming up later on, we'll be finding out if Tory policy on housing and planning law is going to create a free-for-all, why families of British jihadis are plotting to smuggle them back into the country, and why Public Health England is still persisting with recommendations vaping as an alternative to smoking, despite people now actually dying from doing it. 0344 499 1000. You'll listen to me, Mike Graham, right here on Talk Radio.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Now, forgive me for pouring cold water on the idea of a government of national unity, but first of all, quite rightly, as Julia Hartley Brewer said this morning on The Breakfast Show, the very last thing that it is a government of national unity. It is a government which is being proposed as a sort of coup against Boris Johnson. If there is going to be a vote of no confidence tabled in the Prime Minister, if he then decides to resign, if he then decides to call an election, then let's have an election. Let's not have this kind of, you know, rather murky and slightly mysterious organisation behind let's all gang up against Boris Johnson to see if we can get him out and put somebody into Downing Street who didn't actually get elected to be there. For heaven's sake. 0344 499 1000. We'll take your calls. First, though, let's go live to the Tory party conference in Manchester and talk to Ben Bradley, Conservative MP for Mansfield. Ben, a very good morning to you. Welcome.
Morning, you're right.
I'm very well. Now, your conference is being described by people who know these things as very buoyant, very calm, very kind of assured. Is something going on?
It's quite jolly, I have to say. There's a pretty straightforward message that's printed massively on the side of the building that broadly we all agree with. And I think most of the people out there in the country are sick to death of this whole Brexit conversation. Let's get Brexit done. That's something we can all unite behind.
Yeah, let's get Brexit done is a sort of new slogan, isn't it? We heard it first coming out of the mouth of Dominic Cummings when he didn't know who Carl Turner MP was. And in fact, he probably preferred it when he didn't know who Carl Turner was. Because once you find out who Carl Turner is, things get a lot worse. But it is a very buoyant conference. It doesn't sound to me at the moment as if there's that much kind of dissent going on. I saw a couple of clips last night of David Gawk talking about how he was concerned about a no-deal Brexit, but the likes of David Gawk, who is now an independent MP anyway, are less likely to be heard, aren't they?
Well, as you say, David now sits as an independent, but I mean, there's a number of those guys, the 21 who lost the whip, who are here actually and engaging with it in a positive way. I think it's great. Broadly, I think even David Gawk probably wants to get Brexit done. The government's policy remains to get a deal and get it passed through Parliament, which is by far the simplest way to get the thing over the line. You know, and it certainly seems increasingly optimistic that that's going to happen. Over the last couple of weeks, we've had more of that positive kind of soundings. You know, Juncker saying, "Oh, we're not committed ideologically to the backstop. We're you know, looking at the alternatives." And, you know, there's still a gap there, clearly, in terms of coming to some conclusion. But I'm quite optimistic that there's going to be something back in Parliament for us to vote on.
It seems to me that politics in this country is entirely fractured. I think most people would probably agree with that. The bottom line for me is, how do you fix it again? How do you get it back to where it was before all of this craziness happened? Because you've now got an opposition who are literally against everything that the government wants to do. You know, they will stop you and stymie you at every point, at every turn, at every corner that they can. They're going to try and get you to use different language, despite the language that they've been using. They wouldn't give you permission to adjourn the Parliament in order to have your conference. You know, every single suggested idea that Boris Johnson has is going to be voted down. And as long as there's more of them than there are of you, you're not going to get anywhere.
Yeah, well, you're right. We need to get beyond this whole Brexit argument, which is very polarised, very divisive, increasingly frustrating. And you see that frustration in the tone of the discussion as we go along. And we then need to have an election because, frankly, Parliament is set in that kind of aggressive opposition for opposition's sake on everything. There are so many issues in our society. I've been in panels this morning about youth work and about children's services. And the only way you can improve those services is with a cross-party consensus as to the way forward if you're going to have a long-term plan. And that just isn't possible in the current climate. So not just because of the majority or Brexit, actually it's really important we have an election so we can move into an atmosphere where we can actually work together on these things again.
And there's a feeling as well that Boris and Dominic Cummings and the Downing Street team kind of know what is going on at all times, that they are still quite confident of what it is that their aim is and of how they're going to get that aim to be successful. Is that the sense that you get? Do you get the sense that there is a confidence there, that they don't feel like they can be stopped?
There's a cunning plan, I'm sure.
Is there?
I think they're...
Who's
they obviously,
Baldrick? That's what I want to know.
Well, I think they obviously have... I talked to the Attorney General about this last week, who was saying, you know what, it's not absolutely clear what we will do because there are a million things that could happen in the coming days and weeks that could change the situation. But we know what all of our options are and we're confident in the options. And as things progress, we'll choose the options that work. And obviously, there's every reason not to put all of those things out into the public domain because inevitably you say, right, we're going to do X, Y, and Z, then Remainers in Parliament will make moves to prevent those things. But it does seem, you know, Boris is certainly confident that we will be leaving on the 31st.
Yes, and he does seem to be unnaturally confident. What do you make of all the sort of the allegations against him as well? Because the Jennifer R. Curry one still hasn't gone away. He was interviewed about it on Sunday on the Andrew Marr show, and he kept the line, which he has kept throughout, saying there was no reason for him to register any particular conflict of interest. He says that they were friends, but, you know, nothing more than that. The other one I'm less concerned about because it's 20 years old and is being made an allegation being made by a journalist about something that happened at a Spectator party in 1999. I mean, who knows? He's denied that already.
Well, they're going to throw everything at him, aren't they, at the end of the day? We are, like I say, in this polarised, kind of aggressive political culture at the minute. And as we get closer and closer to this deadline, there's increasingly a realisation that actually this Brexit thing's going to happen and, God, we better throw the kitchen sink at it to stop it. And that becomes increasingly personal. And, you know, Boris has been very vocal. I think the more you put yourself out there and with a strong opinion, the more you get back in return. He's the figurehead for hate for a lot of people, isn't he?
He really is. I mean, he's unnaturally hated, I think, by so many people.
But it's such a divisive thing, isn't it? And ultimately you come out and say, right, we're going to leave the EU and we're going to do it come what may because people are sick of this and we need to move on. And if you don't agree with that, you know, that's a very divisive thing to say. But frankly, we need to grasp the nettle and get Brexit done, to coin a phrase, before
just
we can get back to a position.
It.
Yeah, over and over, it'll sink in. But I still think there are people who haven't quite accepted it yet in Parliament and elsewhere. But he is going to attract all of that for the next 6 weeks. He's going to be that figure of a lot of aggression and a lot of anger. But that doesn't mean it's not the right thing to do.
And what do you think is going on within those anti-Boris Brigade people's heads, where they think that they can actually unseat him, they think they can get into Downing Street by some means, fair or foul? I've even heard talk of impeaching him. Have they just been watching, you know, the news in America and thinking, well, if it's good enough for the Democrats against Donald Trump, we'll follow suit?
Well, they seem to be able to just change the constitution and the rules as they please, don't they, and do whatever they like in some scenarios, so perhaps maybe they will. But I listened to you just before we started speaking and talking about, you know, the hypocrisy, in my view. There's a big complaint that, you know, Boris wasn't elected by a general election, all the rest of it. Here he is saying, I want one. And at the same time, they're trying to impose a totally non-elected coalition of Remainers into Parliament to block the referendum result. It just strikes me as rank hypocrisy, to be honest.
Well, it really does. And also, all of these people like Dominic Grieve, who I presume is still a Conservative, technically speaking, is up at the conference. He's talking about stopping Brexit pretty much at any cost. Well, it's not his job to do that, surely.
Absolutely. You know, and he was elected on a manifesto that said we were going to deliver the thing, same as 85% of Parliament, if not more. So there is no justification for that, as far as I'm concerned. And like I say, this being a divisive and polarising issue means that there will be a lot of language and a lot of aggression around the issue. But that doesn't mean it's not the right thing to do. And you come to my constituency and knock on some doors in old mining villages where people are telling me, you know what, I will never, ever vote Labour again while that man is in charge. And I think we need to get Brexit done. And even if I don't actually like Boris, I'm still going to back Boris because ultimately he's doing what I've asked him to do.
And what's being said up there this week about the Brexit Party? Because they're obviously the kind of the joker in the pack, if you like, depending upon what sort of Brexit you guys organise. They may be on your side or against you.
Yeah, and I mean, that'll certainly make a difference. I don't imagine them making any firm decisions about that until we get to an election and we know exactly what the landscape looks like. We could be in a position where we've delivered Brexit and things have moved on. We could be in a position where we can't get a deal and we're saying, well, we're going to leave without one, and then it kind of negates the Brexit Party from that perspective. But there's not been a great deal of discussion about it, to be honest. I think we're confident in our objective and what we want to achieve. There's certainly a political discussion to be had about, you know, wanting to maximise the Leave vote and make sure that we're not divided in the way that perhaps you could argue the Remain side is in terms of who you want to vote for. But, you know, if I'm a Brexit voter right now, in my constituency, again, I don't want Jeremy Corbyn in, I want Brexit delivered, then I'm going to have to vote Conservative.
Yes, and I think the Conservative vote is obviously very, very well held up in certain parts of the country, but it's not going to be well held up in Scotland, we are told. It's certainly not going to be well held up in other parts of the country where perhaps there's more of a Remain vote going on. Is that a concern?
Yes. If you come to Leave voting seats in the Midlands and the North and come and knock on some doors, it seems very positive at the minute. There are other places, obviously less so. The answer, frankly, is to get Brexit done and get out the other side of it and talk about schools and education and the NHS and the things that we all broadly agree on. It becomes a less divisive argument. The challenge at the minute, you look at even the very best polling, some that says, right, 150-seat Conservative majority, we're still losing seats in the South West and in Scotland, which is really, really challenging. So until we get beyond this binary divisive argument, that is going to be a challenge.
And you've got Sajid Javid's big speech today, and you've got quite a few policies out there now, haven't you? You've got the new hospitals that were announced yesterday by Boris Johnson. You've got the new housing and planning application changes, which are going to come out today. Are you confident that any of that is resonating with the public?
Until I get back out there and start talking to people about it and see what's sunk in, it's really difficult to say. But I think broadly, the overarching themes in terms of education and policing, in particular in the NHS, these big announcements. I mean, I don't get complaints from constituents about the NHS anymore. You go back 5 years or so, everything was, oh, Tories don't care about the NHS. It seems to me like that's kind of been negated to some extent by the really positive announcements around funding and hospitals and all the rest of it, because I just don't get that feedback anymore. I do still get it about schools and about policing, and that's why I'm really pleased that they've been, top priorities since Boris took over.
And as for last week's kind of madness, because that's what I'm going to call it, the 2 days of parliamentary business, which were hijacked really by sort of talk of language and how certain words shouldn't be used and how certain other words should be used. Do you think that was a one-off? Has that gone away now? Was it a sort of one-hit wonder?
It was certainly incredibly frustrating. And many colleagues had to, cancel really positive community stuff, school visits, and I had a veterans club meeting that I had to cancel to go and sit down there and listen to that nonsense. And obviously, with it being last minute, there's nothing else going on in Parliament, just the chamber. So you're either sat there listening to it directly, or you're sat in your office watching it on the telly, and there's nothing else to do.
There's no escape.
We achieved nothing in those 2 days at all. So really, really frustrating. And I think that frustration fed into the tone of the debate. There are a lot of people who, frankly, didn't think we should be there before we even started. So hopefully that's, the peak of the hill and we can head back down into normal territory. But I do think those frustrations will continue to exist until we get beyond the 31st.
Yeah, I can't imagine what it is that you're going to talk about when you get back from conference, but that's another story. Ben, thank you very much indeed. Ben Bradley, Conservative MP for Mansfield there, talking live from Tory Party Conference up in Manchester. We're there, of course, with Julie Hartley Brewer throughout the week. She'll be bringing you breakfast from there every single morning with a whole host of guests, a whole host of politicians, cabinet ministers as well. We've got lots more to do, including talking to lots of you, because you are the people that make this show happen. You are the people that make this show work, and we want to hear your opinions on everything that's going on. 0344 499 1000. I think there's a bit of a spring in everybody's step up there in Manchester, and I think there's a bit of sort of good fortune in the air, perhaps, dare I say it, a bit of optimism perhaps for Brexit, a bit of good fortune being talked about for the first time since they came back from the unprorogued Parliament.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Now, there's been an awful lot, as I said just before the news there, of rumours flying around that Rahima Begum was on her way back to this country or was secretly being smuggled into this country. I don't know where these rumours start, but let's say a very good morning to Dr. Raqib Hassan. Raqib, very good morning to you. Welcome back to the studio.
Thank you for having me again.
Yeah, I mean, it's weird. I don't know why this has happened over the last few days, but I was getting a lot of people on Twitter asking me, is it true that Rahima Begum's been somehow smuggled back into the country? And I can only assume that the rumour starts somewhere, gets a bit of credence on social media, and everybody starts asking people like me, is it true? What I do know is it's not true. And in fact, Priti Patel this morning has already said there's no chance of her coming back.
I think, to be honest, I feel that the Home Secretary, Priti Patel, I think she's absolutely spot on this issue. I think the reality of the matter is, ultimately, her responsibility is to maintain the UK's domestic security. We're talking about someone who ultimately joined a jihadist barbaric cult.
Yeah.
And ultimately, as I said, Priti Patel, she has to prioritise the security of British people.
Yeah, well, absolutely right. And also, she has to keep an eye as well on the ones who have already come back.
Absolutely.
Some of whom were fighters and some of whom were married to those fighters. So how do they do both of those things?
Absolutely. So at the moment, there are hundreds of people who have actually returned and they are walking the streets of Britain. Mm. So she very much has to focus on that, never mind actually taking a soft approach when it comes to the likes of Shamima Begum.
Yeah, right. But presumably now the law has to change because Boris Johnson has said, because the Americans have also said to our government, it would be good if you took responsibility for these people rather than leaving them where they are, where they might even do more damage. I mean, what's your view? Do you think they should be kept out of the country?
I think ultimately there's space for international cooperation in terms of how do we deal with such individuals, perhaps that we could hold trials outside of the UK.
Right. Almost like a war crimes tribunal.
Absolutely, because the reality of the matter is there is no public appetite for the likes of Shamima Begum to return to our shores. Mm. And Priti Patel, her decision on the matter is very much in keeping with the general public mood on this issue. And it's high time that our politicians actually start listening to British people, and because there are cases where they haven't previously done that on a number of important issues.
Because, of course, the difficulty, I suppose, for the law-abiding Muslim community, which is the vast majority, of course,
absolutely,
of the Muslim community in this country, you know, Shamima Begum doesn't do them any favours.
Absolutely not. Right? It's disastrous for the general reputation of the broader British Muslim population. And this idea that, oh, but she was 15 when she left, I think that's very disrespectful towards young British Muslim girls.
These are the same people that say we got to listen to Greta Thunberg.
Absolutely. And the reality is the vast majority of British Muslim girls who are currently attending school, they just want to further their academic ambitions. They want to do the best they can for their families and their community. So this idea that we should feel sorry for Shamima Begum purely on the basis of her age because she left when she was 15 is absolute nonsense. We should also bear in mind that the age of criminal responsibility in England and Wales is actually 10.
Yes.
So she's 5 years above that.
Well, exactly right. So how would you get to, say, from point A to point B, how would you get to the place where you could maybe have some kind of international court which people would sign up to? Would it be done through the UN? How would it work?
I think that there's definitely space for it, and perhaps it would be through international organisations. I think that is something that countries of the West, the unfortunate reality of the matter is this isn't exclusively a British problem.
No.
There are a number of Western countries.
Well, her husband's Dutch, isn't he?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, you know, case in point. So there has to be more international cooperation in terms of how we handle this problem. But what I would say is that there's a shared appetite among those countries that those people do not return to those societies.
No, right. Which brings us on to an interesting piece you wrote earlier this week for Spiked Online about this new definition of Islamophobia.
Oh, yes.
Because, of course, that resonates an awful lot with this kind of story, doesn't it? Because where you have people reading about people like Shamima Begum and people going to fight for foreign countries in parts of the world where terrorism exists.
Absolutely.
There's an anti-Muslim discrimination law being brought in, effectively, but you're not happy with it.
I'm not happy with the working definition by the all-party parliamentary group on British Muslims.
Right.
Because I feel that that definition of Islamophobia, it dangerously conflates what we would consider hard forms of anti-Muslim prejudice.
Mm.
It's dangerously conflating that with perfectly legitimate criticisms of religious ideology.
Right.
It's important not to mix the two together.
Is it interesting that you've got a law sort of defining something like Islamophobia in the same way that you've got one that defines anti-Semitism? Because we saw the Labour Party, for the last couple of years, struggling with the actual definition even of anti-Semitism.
Yes.
They can't even agree on what that is.
I think with this particular definition, what we'll say that the huge problem is, I've analysed a definition, I've read the report produced by the APPG and British Muslims, is that it treats British Muslims as some sort of homogenous, monolithic block.
Yeah.
The reality of the matter is, when we're talking about the oppression and victimisation of British Muslims, much of that is actually experienced within their own communities.
Mm.
And that's something that is missing from the report. And I would say that's a glaring omission. And that's something that we don't talk about
much
at all.
What, you mean they're discriminating against each other?
Absolutely.
So it's an example of that.
So, for example, we could talk about Ahmadiyya Muslims. They're a minority sect. And there are organisations such as the Muslim Council of Britain who have actually said that Muslims are not obliged to acknowledge Ahmadis as Muslims.
Right.
And we also had a case where there was a mosque in London, in our own capital, which is actually distributing leaflets saying that if Ahmadis do not, if they do not support orthodox interpretations of Islam, they should, within 3 days, face the capital punishment.
Mm.
Now, this is something going on within our British Muslim communities.
And I don't think anybody listening to this show would have probably heard of that ever before.
Absolutely not.
And
the mainstream media aren't too keen to report.
Well, I don't know. I think maybe they think. I think the problem is with a lot of media stories about Muslims is that, you know, a lot of media are terrified of being accused of being anti-Muslim or of somehow, you know, fanning the flames of hatred and all this kind of nonsense,
but
right?
We're talking about,
but we're talking
about a mosque which is distributing material, which is saying that if Ahmadis do not convert to their understanding of Islam within 3 days,
they should
face the capital punishment.
Yeah. They should be killed. They should be executed.
And this is on British soil.
Yeah. Well,
and
why are they not being arrested? You see, my view of a lot of this is that there are already laws that cover that. You don't necessarily need an Islamophobia law to stop somebody from threatening another person on British soil.
This is absolutely horrendous case.
Yeah.
That's the fact of the matter. But if we're looking back at the definition itself,
mm.
in my view, we had this what I call an unholy alliance of clueless metropolitan politicians.
Yeah.
these crank left-wing academics who actually act like political activists.
Yes.
They're not serious.
You've got a
scholars.
Name for them, haven't you?
Yeah. Academivists.
Academivists.
Mix of two.
Yeah. It's quite hard to say, but I quite like the word.
And then, and with that, they actually communicated, they actually, I would go as far as saying collaborated with Islamist-backed organisations in this country, which poses these, you know, good-willed civil society organisations. And they produced a definition which, in my view, is a blasphemy law through the back door.
Mm.
And we should be very worried about it.
And when are we actually looking at this coming into force in this country, this Islamophobia sort of law?
Well, interestingly, we had, well, thankfully, we the Conservative government rejected the definition, but we, the reality of the matter is... other political parties have.
Mm.
So, interestingly, we do have a number of political parties who actually support the definition,
right.
Which I think is quite worrying in itself.
Well, yeah, I mean, because also when you look at the Muslim world and you look at the Middle East, for example, an awful lot of the difficulties and the conflicts are caused because of the wars between the Sunnis and the Shias, right?
Absolutely.
And that's something which I presume doesn't bleed over into Europe,
well,
or does
it? I think what I would say is that those sectarian tensions, they do exist. And I think I gave you that case in point. That was, you know, in terms of the Ahmadiyya Muslim community in the UK. I think what's really interesting, though, is that we have politicians such as Baroness Ida Warsi, Naz Shah of the Labour Party, Bradford MP.
Mm.
They try to portray British Muslims as a homogenous monolithic bloc. They think the same way on these sort of issues. The reality, that is not the case at all. We're talking about an exceptionally diverse population, which is diverse in terms of their political ideology, their social values. But we have these regressive politicians of different party colours who, for their own political agenda, seek to portray the wider British Muslim population as this sort of uniform community.
Mm. And they presumably want to point out to the Muslim community that they represent them in some way,
absolutely.
Shape, or
form. These are, but these are the two individuals here that we're discussing. These are self-appointed spokeswomen.
Right.
That's what I call them. And but they need to be called out.
Yeah. And what? So what is the passage of this particular law at the moment then? Where are we with the Islamophobia definition?
I think that in terms of when we're looking at this particular definition, as I said, that we have local councils which have adopted the definition. We have political parties which have adopted the definition. But we do. But it is important to note that the Conservative government did reject the definition.
Yeah. What do you think the definition should actually be?
I think that we need to focus on proven, evidenced cases of anti-Muslim discrimination in markets.
Mm-hmm.
Particularly, we're talking about the labour market, access to social housing, but also in the rented sector.
Right.
I think those sort of issues, you know, looking at, you know, are there religious penalties that we need to address in our markets? And I don't think anyone would really be in serious opposition to that.
I don't think they would. But then again, do we not already have laws that cover that in terms
I think that there's actually a strong case that there is existing legislation which can cover for that.
Yeah.
Now, but if people seriously want to focus on anti-Muslim discrimination, what they should do is just focus on that. What they shouldn't do is then delve into different matters and then try to almost clamp down on perfectly legitimate criticism of Islamic ideology, but also the social implications of orthodox religious doctrine and what sort of impact that has in terms of, you know, things such as social integration in the UK.
Well, that's
and
one
community
of the
cohesion.
That's one of the things that we saw in Birmingham, that school, wasn't it? Where you would have, you know, the Muslim community there, albeit maybe a small part of the Muslim community.
Well, Jez is quite big on LGBT rights and all the rest
of it.
Well,
he was
a bit quiet there,
wasn't
he?
Well, funny enough, when we covered that story, I said, you know, for the left, this is a real problem because they don't know whether to support the LGBT lessons that are going on inside the school or support the Muslims
the thing is, Mark, when you go too much into identity politics, you know, you start finding yourself in contradictory
positions. But this is where it starts to get tricky because, you know, there is for me no real good reason why you need to have a law against Islamophobia in a way, because, you know, you can argue that you might.
Mike, I have
one...
a problem with the term Islamophobia.
Yeah.
That's the reality. If you want to call it anything, I would use the phrase anti-Muslim prejudice.
Yes.
Because Islamophobia almost gives an insinuation that we live in a society where we shouldn't be allowed or entitled to criticise religious ideology.
Right.
We live in a free and open society. Being able to express views on the contradiction.
Yeah, I mean, if I want to say, for example,
be able to do that.
I want to say that some Muslim attitudes towards homosexuality I find to be pretty disgusting, and I don't think should be allowed in a modern Western world. You know, I don't think I should be accused of Islamophobia.
Absolutely not.
You know,
absolutely,
but there would be those who would accuse me of that.
Of course there is. There'll be people who would be... They would want to use that very working definition to clamp down on that opinion. And I think that's deeply unhealthy for our democracy.
Yeah. And also, what it does do, and I think a lot of people would bear this out on social media, certainly, and probably some were already doing so, I haven't checked, it puts a lot of people's backs up when you make out that one particular group is suffering discrimination, when some other groups are also suffering discrimination, but there's nobody championing their cause.
I think the interesting thing there, we can take it one step further. There's minority groups within the broader British Muslim population who are experiencing, you know, serious forms of oppression and victimisation.
Yeah.
But because there's too many metropolitan politicians who have fallen into this trap of treating British Muslims as some sort of victimised monolithic bloc, they're missing those internal tensions and those internal cases of oppression. They have no understanding of it, and they're ignoring it to their peril.
Absolutely. Dr. Rakib Hassan, thank you very much indeed. The Henry Jackson Society. You can find that piece on Spiked Online, right? I'll retweet it out just before you leave.
You're very kind.
Not at all. If you want to have something to say about this, you know what to do. 0344 499 1000. I think what Rakib says about Shamima Begum and others who are caught up in the whole ISIS scenario facing some kind of international criminal court, I think is a good idea. I'd like to know what you think about that. 0344 499 1000. This is Talk Radio.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A mid-morning dance with the devil.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham.
On Talk Radio.
Oh, goodness!
It's going to be a very interesting week. The Tories are in Manchester. Con is in for 5 whole days, apparently. So he says, anyway. We shall see. 0344 499 1000 is the number. We're going to talk to Jim Dale now, not the bloke that used to be in the Carry On films, but senior meteorologist at British Weather. Jim, very good morning to you.
Good morning to you.
Now, I don't know why my producer's never heard of Jim Dale from the Carry On films, but I have, and he was a very funny bloke.
Yeah, he was. Mine is Jim N. R. Dale. That's how I know, because of the Jim Dale. There was a bit of a crossover.
Yes, of
course.
It's
a bit of a long story, to be honest with you, but nonetheless.
Yeah, but you see, these things are important. It's the details that people care about.
I know. I recognise that. It is a long story, and I did used to get confused when I was in my Navy days as a meteorologist with the same guy when he was. I suppose that's his heights in the Carry On films, and he was. It was an era of, you know, that I think people remember, particularly if you're over, I guess, about 30, 30, 40.
Yeah, well, my producer's very young, you see. He's never heard of anything. He's never seen any films either. He actually watched Jurassic Park for the first time last night and didn't like it.
Yeah, fair enough.
These are the calibre of people I have to work with, Jim. This is the trouble.
Okay, well, you're talking to a meteorological professional, if I may say that.
Good.
So you can fire any weather-related, climate-related questions at me.
Well, I'll tell you what I am going to fire at you. I live down in Sussex, right? And at the weekend, I couldn't believe the sights I was seeing because the sea was so angry and raging that it was kind of washing up against all of the beach huts and almost sweeping them. I mean, it's very, very rough seas. And that was before the hurricane, which is coming on Thursday, Hurricane Lorenzo. So it's going to be a pretty harsh week, isn't it?
Yeah, well, just going back a step or two, I think the thing to think about of the weather of late, in other words, it's a little bit of a payback, let's face it. We had a decent summer, and I'm a big believer in the balancing effect of Mother Nature. If we have a run of settled weather, or dry weather, of warm weather, or even hot weather, then we tend to see, and especially at this time of year, we tend to see the other side of it. It's not unusual for us to be involved with what you might call stormy weather at this time of year. That's absolutely the case. It's a norm. Obviously, when you're in it, it doesn't feel like it. But from time to time, we do go through these pulses of weather that sort of make the eyebrows raise.
Yes.
Raise the eyebrows.
It was only a couple of weeks ago that it was really hot. And you know, I was talking about how, you know, goodness me, I mean, you forget, don't you? Because every year you can have quite a warm September and then you forget that it was warm last year and you think, my God, this is unusual.
Yeah, absolutely. And if you take a trip across the Atlantic to America, even more so you see those sort of diversions of weather, the way that it's been occurring of late, for example, or like in Montana, very deep snow. This is in the northern United States. And all of these things can occur at this time of year. Autumn is what it is. It's a changeable month where you can get any type of weather, as we will see this week, because you mentioned Lorenzo.
Yeah.
Lorenzo is a hurricane. It's down in the Azores. It will not be a hurricane by the time it touches upon ourselves, probably Thursday, Friday time. Now, at the moment, the models are suggesting it's going to go north. That's between Iceland and Scotland, okay. And in which case we'll get the cold front. We'll get a little bit of tropical air in there, or subtropical air. Probably get a bit of a deluge at some point at that time. But I don't, at this stage, see it as being too much to be concerned about. Before we get there, by the way, it does turn colder this week.
Get through
later today's weather. Coming in, Republic of Ireland are getting a little bit of a pacing with rain at the moment. That's heading towards northern areas, a little bit of the south as well. So it'll be a wet evening for most. If you're on the road tonight, this evening, it will be a wet time. Get through that one and the flood potential associated with it in certain areas still going.
Yeah, so I was going to say, there's been a bit of flooding, hasn't there, overnight? And certainly, I mean, down in southeast England yesterday, there was an awful downpour of rain. I got caught in it. So I was out walking the dog and my jacket was wet until this morning.
Fair enough. This strange one, this one, because the floods have kind of been dotted around, if you like. They haven't really concentrated themselves in one area. So everything from northeast Scotland all the way down to Cornwall, you know, and across to Sussex and Surrey and the Midlands and the northwest and Yorkshire, you know, here and there, that's been the sort of pinboard, if you like, the darts board as far as the floods are concerned. So we got another little episode tonight where people have to be careful, particularly if they're driving on the road, etc., on those motorways. Best not to go 70 miles an hour when it's teaming down and all the rest of it.
Yeah, or worse. Some of them, they're doing 90 in that kind of weather. It's unbelievable, isn't it?
They do. And I'd say quite openly, they're idiotic in terms of that type of driving in that type of weather. So you're going to get that this evening. Then we're going to start to drift away, not tomorrow so much, but certainly Wednesday, Thursday time before we see the bit of Lorenzo. Much colder. First frost of the season in terms of the general play of things. Now, they'll occur in Scotland for sure. The Glens, definitely, down to zero and a little bit less than that. It's going to feel colder, but actually, you know what? It's going to feel a lot better in terms of the sunshine you're going to see, the crisp blue skies, all of that sort of stuff. That'll be Wednesday for you. So, you know, we are in these changeable times. The weather's showing all of its faces at once, it seems, this week and last week, and it'll probably carry on.
Yeah, great. And as far as the hurricane systems are concerned, I mean, normally we see them, you know, obviously hitting the sort of southeast coast of America, Florida, and into the Caribbean and that.
Yeah.
Is this one coming from a different place, or is it just on a different projection, or what?
Yeah, I'll tell you, all hurricanes are all born off the west coast of Africa.
Right.
That's where they start their life. And generally speaking, they get caught in the trade winds, and the trade winds take them not west to east, but east to west. Mm. That's why they end up in, you know, the Floridas of this world and up that sort of towards New York as they bend around. This one particularly isn't doing that. It's going north quite quickly, so it's caught up with the Azores, and it will get sucked into what we call the jet stream. The jet stream running west to east, high level. So essentially what's happening there is it's getting sucked into the normal sort of Atlantic systems, going up and then across, and it looks as if at the centre of that, not as a hurricane, but as an ex-tropical storm by then, it'll pass probably, although the models are a little bit arguing amongst themselves at the moment, this is the computer models, between Scotland and Iceland. So we'll watch, we'll see on that one, see how it progresses. But this is the time of year, you know, late September, October, when you do get these ex-hurricane events occurring and sharp changes in the weather. We've always got to be on a little bit on our toes. Now and springtime, very similar. You know, you can produce this, you know, in America, tornado season and all the rest of it going with it.
Yeah.
So, it's a kind of normal thing, but I don't think necessarily some of the adversities that we've seen, whether we're talking very high temperatures or storms or whatever, are not necessarily that normal. We see some tremendous weather this year, so it's been a year of maybe looking over our shoulder at climate change and everything else that's going with it.
Yeah, could well be. What about snow this year? Because sometimes we hear that so-called climate change is going to change the way that we have winters in this country. You know, we have maybe damper summers, perhaps, and milder winters. Is that still the trend?
Yeah, got to make sure we don't confuse climate with weather. Weather can do anything at any time, virtually.
Yeah.
The trend, or at least the documented trend as far as what are the expectations of climate change means. It doesn't mean we're necessarily going colder. That will be arranged with what weather we get. You know, in other words, whether we get a 2010-11 type event where it was very cold for a few weeks or not. You know, we get the mild stuff. But what we probably will end up with is sharp pushes of cold weather coming out of the east, particularly beasts from the east and all of that.
Yes.
Coming out, you know, in a short-term sort of scenario and giving us that sort of pacing and then going away again. Does that make sense? That's my general expectation. Not sure we're looking for a 62-63 winter at this moment in time. I'll keep you posted. And by the way, as far as that's concerned, and Christmas, can we mention Christmas?
Please. Yeah, it's the first official mention of Christmas on the Independent Republic of Mike Graham. Message timed 11:56, Monday, September the 30th.
There you go. And it's everything to do with a white Christmas. I'm one of the blokes who actually count the snowflakes on Christmas Day for the bookies.
Wow.
Or not.
Brilliant.
Or not. I can, you know, if it's a mild day, I can put my feet up and there's no problem. But I actually do officiate in terms of, because the bookies can't do that on their own, of course. You know, they put the bet out, so they could have a...
Well, it might be that people wouldn't trust them. They need a proper and fit and proper person like you, Jim, to do it.
Yeah, so I'm there. I end up in Glasgow, in Edinburgh, in London. I don't. I just look at I look at what's going on in charts, look at the radar, and look at the observations that occur, and I'll make my judgment accordingly.
But, okay. What's your prediction? What's your prediction?
Well, stay tuned. I was going to say, perhaps have me on, 10 days before the event, and I'll basically give your listeners.
Yes. Well, I'd be delighted, Jim. I'm afraid that will involve you having to talk to our producer, Con, who's never heard of Jim Dale. But don't worry, because now he has.
Yes, he has.
Jim N. R. Dale. There you are. Not to be confused with the one from the Carry On films, and in fact, Barnum, which he was also in. 0344-499-1000. We might have a white Christmas. You heard it here first. This is Talk Radio.
The Human Zoo, where they don't hide away the sick animals.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham.
On Talk Radio.
You heard my eyes open. That's no lie.
It This is the Independent Republic of Mike Gray and Matthew Wright coming up at 1 o'clock. We've got loads of you to talk to between now and then. 0344 499 1000. And just a note of caution, we are very busy these days. If you can't get on, do keep trying, because we're here every day, 10 till 1. There's a podcast as well every afternoon when it comes out, of course, on iTunes, on Acast. And you can get that every single day as well. Lots of clips on Twitter, lots of clips on YouTube as well. Look out for them there. Let's go now first to Darren, who's in Walsall, wants to talk about climate change. Hi, Darren.
Hello, Mike. All right, mate.
Yeah, good, mate. What are you doing?
First-time caller.
Welcome.
I've only got onto your show the last couple of weeks ago, and I've been listening to it on catch-up, and the missus thinks I'm going mad because I'm sitting here with my headphones in, and I'm just in bits. The geezer from Rotherham jumping around from gardens.
Oh, mate. I know. Brilliant, wasn't he? The guy, I mean, I presume he's been driving off from a few petrol stations over the weekend, you know.
But anyway, what I wanted to say was, see Greta Thunberg, she stands at the UN shouting at us adults, yeah, you've got to do this, you've got to do that. Why doesn't she start? And with me, my own personal, I might have a modicum of respect for her if she did. If she went, look, kids, get off your Xboxes all night long.
Yeah.
Walk to school instead of doing a 300-yard drive with your mum in a Chelsea tractor.
Yeah.
Don't upgrade your smartphone every 2 years. Don't change your trainers because they've gone out of fashion. Wear them till they wear out. You know, and then you might have a little bit of...
Stop eating fast food. Do you know what I read about her at the weekend, Darren, right? She doesn't know how she's going to get back to Sweden, right? She's going to get to... She's going overland to Santiago in Chile. She then has to try and work out, because apparently the £4 million boat without a toilet has gone back to Sweden, right, without her. The people who came over in it have flown back on a plane. Couldn't make it up.
And another one. Prince Harry.
Oh, my God.
I'm an ex-service for myself. Yeah. A lot of respect for the lad. Until he's gone, little Mr. Woke.
I know.
You know, he's gone to Africa and she's took her hairdresser with her.
I know.
Why has she got to fly her hairdresser with him?
Know what I mean? This is it. I mean, she's standing with these people as their sister, as their mother, as a woman of colour. And then she's got her hairdresser in the tent behind her. It's ridiculous.
Mate, I honestly think with that lad, he ain't enjoying this. He's doing it because she's telling him to.
Well, there was a great tweet that was put out. There was a picture of her. They were in the mosque, right? She's got the veil on. He's sitting next to her and looking at the camera. And Piers Morgan tweeted out, do you think he wishes he was back in Vegas playing naked billiards?
Mate, he wants to be out on the glorious 12th shooting birds. He doesn't.
I know.
He's put a stop there. He wants to meet Donald Trump and have a few beers with him, because who wouldn't?
It'll all be over soon, I tell you what. And then all his mates will say, look, I told you. I told you.
And he'll be back on the lesson in Vegas.
I know.
I've been missing this.
I know. Absolutely. Brilliant, Darren. Thank you very much. Welcome to the show. Welcome to the Independent Republic of Mike Gray. Another convert from the dark side. Let's talk to Peter in Folkestone. Hi, Peter.
Hi, Mike.
How are you?
Not as upbeat as your last guy, I'm afraid.
Why not?
I just wanted to say that I'm so disappointed, angry, and let down, and just angry.
Yes.
That these MPs who brought up the name of Joe Cox, they're trying to own the pain that, you know, her family suffered.
Mm.
They're trying to infer that they're in pain as a result. They were colleagues.
Yes.
You know?
I mean, it's disgraceful, actually. I mean, even Brendan Cox, her widow, said the same thing. Her widower, rather, said the same thing. I don't want to see my ex-wife, my former wife's name used like this.
And you can understand why, because he has pain. God love the poor fella. You know, and he's bringing up her children, you know, bless their wee hearts. And yet these absolutely, there is no limit to which these schmucks will stoop to try and to shut down other people's conversations by using, you know, holy grail type of words that are meant to make everyone stop and start, revisiting everything they say. It's beyond... It's like people today trying to own the pain of slavery from 300 years ago. It's ridiculous in both...
It's actually insulting to the memory of the people who really have suffered, you know?
Absolutely. And it's... How can they think that in any way, shape or form, it's going to advance and bring the country together? Are you kidding me?
I know. Well, Jeremy Corbyn, I think, must spend most of his life with his fingers crossed behind his back, because whenever he says anything, you just know that he doesn't mean it.
Well, there's a dark side of me, Mike, that says that actually there's a reason why this, you know, outrage is on extra high volume at the moment, which is that last week the policy announcements of, you know, quite possibly one of the strongest socialist agendas that's ever been put forward in this country is not being talked about.
Yeah.
We're not talking about property theft. We're not talking about the closure of private schools, which are perfectly legitimate businesses. But we're all talking about language. Am I wrong?
No, you're absolutely right, Peter. Completely and utterly correct. Thank you for your call. Let's talk to Mike, who's in York. Hello, Mike.
Morning or afternoon now, Mike?
It is just about afternoon, yeah. We're still in the full-blown part of the middle part of the day.
Well, I mean, if that guy wants to be depressed, just have to read the Mail on Sunday. Oh, that's a killer.
That's a bit harsh. I think the new editor's doing a fine job.
Oh, yeah, but the new Miliband, the...
The million-pound million-pound-a-year charity boss.
You could make it up, could you?
No. I mean, it's a great thing. I mean, very selfless of him, it has to be said, that he's willing to give up so much of his time for so little reward just to help people.
Yeah, but it's your money. Don't forget you're working hard.
Yes.
He's all right. Yeah. What I've got to say about Brexit is if they think it's bad now, it even gets worse when once something's signed, you know?
When
we get to the next stage where we sign a deal or whatever, then will we sign a deal without and not come out under World Trade Organization rules? The first thing is that we've got to surrender, or they have command of our fishing rights.
Uh-huh.
So Scottish National Park has got a bit of a problem. Open door migration, so housing's going to be a bit of a problem. And family benefits.
I'm sorry, I didn't realise you had a view of the new document.
Oh, hey. We've all got a new... What will happen in the end? Because all these MPs are suddenly... They're born idle. So they've never... I bet they've not read it.
Come on, they're going to be at work at 2:30 this afternoon. How can you call them bone idle? 2:30 they're getting in.
Dentist appointment, 2:30.
Very good. Thank you very much indeed. Listen, Mike, I'll come back to you when we've seen the proper document and then you can tell me how disappointed you are with it. I'm not sure that you will be disappointed. However, let's talk to Daniel, who's in Epsom. Hi, Daniel.
Hi, Mike. I just want to say, Boris might have touched the lady's leg 20 years ago.
Maybe.
Oh, shock horror.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't imagine them looking into my past. Christ. I mean, is this how low we've sunk now that people are trying to dismiss him with things like this in the press?
Well, I think this is what we're going to see, but I don't think any of it's going to work, you see, unless they've actually got him doing something illegal. And they've even tried that. They've tried to say that he broke the law when he prorogued Parliament, which, of course, he didn't. But, you know, this is going to go on for a while, I think.
Well, I really want him to break that... I really want him to break that law and not ask for an extension. And I think best-case scenario for me, and for most people, actually, is... I'd like to see us leave the European Union with just a free trade deal. I think he'll try and resurrect May's failed treaty, and I think it'll be a mistake. I think we'll be wrangling with them for decades after, and it leaves us too closely aligned, because the reason the EU want us closely aligned is 5 years or 10 years down the line, a future left-wing government could easily get us back in.
Yeah.
I think we need to have a clean break, Mike.
No, I agree with you. And I think the point is that we need to, you know, the language is very important. You know, the surrender document is indeed a surrender document. A no deal, however, is not a no deal, because everything happens as part of a deal. So whatever happens, if we were to leave without a proper withdrawal agreement, that does not mean that we're leaving without a deal. It just means that the deal begins on day one. And that's how it works. And anybody sensible will tell you that. You know, whichever way this works out, Daniel, we will be doing it for a while.
Yeah, but I really hope that's what Boris is banking on. I think he's trying to get us past October the 31st so that actually, like on your show the other day, they said there would just be normal free trade deal we'd revert to immediately. And I think that's what he's trying to do.
Mm.
He's trying to get us over the line. I don't think he has been negotiating, just so we can have it. And he realises that unless he does that, we will never get that free trade deal.
Well, if you look at the way Dominic Cummings and Boris Johnson's body language is, right, it looks to me as if they know precisely what they're doing. They're leading everybody down this path of no deal, whereby it looks like everybody's desperately trying to stop no deal. And then maybe they sneak a little deal in at the end, or not. But the point is that, you know, everybody's time, from Jeremy Corbyn to Joe Swinson to Caroline Lucas, everybody's time is being taken up by desperately attempting to stop something from happening, which might not be happening.
That's very true. I did look at the Conservative conference, and I looked at Dominic Grieve and Gawk that are there. Can someone ask them why they're there?
Because they consider themselves to still be Conservatives, right?
Yeah, but they're not. I'm a Conservative member, and they're no longer Conservatives. Right. I mean, you know, the days of the weak, pathetic, small C Conservatives.
The wets, we used to call them, didn't we?
Yeah, and those, the days of those. I mean, my ideal scenario is that Boris teams up with Nigel and they absolutely romp this election with a huge mandate and a huge majority, and we see a massive change in UK politics moving forward.
Yeah, I think you may well be right, Daniel. Thank you very much indeed for your call. 0344 499 1000 is the number, of course, to call us on. We've pretty much come to the end of yet another barnstorming show. Thanks to all of you who rang in. Sorry to those of you who couldn't get on, but we will be back tomorrow, of course. More Conservative Party conference coming up this afternoon. Matthew Wright is here from 1 o'clock with Kevin O'Sullivan. Sajid Javid is going to be talking about many things, including, of course, adding a couple of stories to your home. Maybe they could add a couple of stories to number 10 Downing Street and stick a couple of the Remainer MPs up there so that they could keep them out of the way. Who can say? We'll be back tomorrow morning from 10 o'clock. Don't forget, you can get yourself the podcast if you didn't actually hear the whole show. That's the best of, which comes out every single day. And if you can't get that, you can always go to the website talkradio.co.uk and listen in for the listen again feature, and you can listen to all of the things that happened on this show all over again. Lots and lots of you tweeted in as well, which I didn't get to all of them. Don't forget Julie Hartley Brewer back at 6:30 tomorrow morning, live from Tory Party Conference up in Manchester. We will see you tomorrow.
Across the UK, online and on DAB, the Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
So if you enjoyed that, be sure to catch the whole show 10 to 1 Monday to Friday on Talk Radio via DAB, online or via the Talk Radio app. If you have an opinion on the stories we cover, we'd love to hear from you. Call us 0344 499 1000 or tweet at Talk Radio during the show to have your say.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.